if you've been following the Delaware story closely, you know that there's a lot of, let's say, action happening with that state in respect to business operations. It all started with the, I mean, I guess it didn't start there, but one of the things that really brought attention to this was the issue of the comp package for Elon Musk with Tesla in the court of Delaware. Judge McCormick rescinded that package, and that sort of started this downstream effect of a lot of corporations beginning to question if Delaware is actually a good place to do business. And now we're at the point now, I feel like almost a year later, Larry, that there's been a lot of movement around this sort of grassroots thing of companies really questioning if Delaware is a place for people to do business. So I'm going to throw it over to you, Larry. I know Gurley from the BG2 pod has some clips. I know there's some stuff on your side that you've done a ton of research on in the last few days that should be surfaced in respects to Delaware. So I'll throw it off to you, and let's see what you've got on your end.
Well, you know, there are a couple of things here. Firstly, as far as the court in Delaware is concerned, I've dealt at length with my views that this judge, Judge McCormick, actually, she's the chancellor. There's a chancellor, there's a vice chancellor, and then there are five other judges. So there's seven of these judges that sit. And Chancellor McCormick took the case. We'll talk about that in a bit, about how she chooses which case goes where. But she took the case against Elon Musk. And, you know, judges are supposed to be completely independent and non-biased in any direction. But when a judge starts a judgment by writing, you know, was the richest man in the world overpaid, that lends a degree of concern.
Bias?
yeah, I wasn't going to use the word bias. I was going to say it raises a degree of concern about the judge's point of view, because, you know, the law is supposed to be blind, right? But when you say that the man that you're making a judgment about, or that the person who's the objective of the whole judgment is the richest man in the world, you're immediately placing a certain degree of bias into the judgment. And it's the first words in the judgment. But all right, we'll let that pass.
Yeah,
because that's not the subject of what we want to talk about today. What we want to talk about today is the extremity that this Delaware court has reached. And we're going to use simple factual tests to determine whether they're extreme or not. And we're going to use their own words to determine whether they're extreme or not.
Yeah.
And really, this is not as much original research as it is some... It is a degree of conversation on what Bill Gurley has turned up in his research. Bill Gurley is, as you know, one of the doyens of the, you know, venture capital movement. He's retired now, but, you know, he was absolutely one of the lead investors in Silicon Valley for many years. And he's a man for whom I have absolute respect. Actually, my sorry story about meeting Bill Gurley was I was, you know, so starstruck that I actually, you know, was almost speechless. The other problem is that I took, you know, he's so tall and I'm so short, I came up to his knees. So it became quite difficult to have a conversation. Anyway.
That's fun. Well, we got to make up for it by having him on the Maverick Mind. How about that?
We'll do that. That's a really great idea. Yeah.
Yes.
And boy, what a maverick. Wow. What an intellect. And because my favorite of all presentations ever, speeches ever, was his presentation at the All-In Conference 2 years ago. Incredible. Just an incredible piece. Anyway, let's go on and let's talk about what we've come here to discuss.
Yeah, let's do it. So I know you've put together some slides. I know you've done a lot of research. Should we start with the second slide you've put together to kind of set the stage?
Yeah, that's so really the conversation.
Pull it up. So walk us through this.
Yeah, so what Bill Gurley based his whole research on, and what I've done a little bit deeper dive into than he was willing to discuss in his few minutes on it, is this paper by Professor Grundfos at Stanford Law. Grundfos is, he is the leading expert on fee awards in class action suits, because he's done this very deep research and he's actually been, you know, he's given evidence at many, many cases. He's at the so-called Rock Center for Corporate Governance, which is a Stanford Law School, position sort of a center of study. And this is very new. It came out on April the 30th. So if we move on, I think one of the most interesting things is to listen to what, a little bit about Joseph Grundfos. So let's listen to Bill.
There's a professor at Stanford named Joe Grundfos, who I've known for many decades now. And Joe is a former commissioner at the SEC. He was appointed by Reagan. He is the creator of the Stanford Directors College, which I think most people consider to be the number one directors college in the world. This is where, if you're an independent director, you go and you learn how to be a better director. He's considered to be one of the most knowledgeable people on the planet when it comes to corporate governance. And anytime I've ever had an issue, and there have been some that I've really needed help on, I've always called Joe.
So, you know, I mean, this is a pretty important guy. And if we move on, I've actually done some, I've just, for those that are interested, I've put down his CV. But what's we'll put these notes on the show notes, but let's talk about what is a lodestar and what is a multiplier, because it's very important to understand these particular expressions. And what is a lodestar? So a lodestar is what an ordinary attorney, what an attorney would have charged in terms of the total number of hours served in a court case multiplied by the standard rate for that case, for that type of case. So if you've spent 1,000 hours and the standard rate is $300 an hour, then 300 times 1,000 is $300,000. That's what a normal attorney would have charged in a normal case, and that is what is called a lodestar. What is a multiplier? So a multiplier is what the court awards an attorney who has worked for no fee but is working on the basis of, if he wins, he gets paid. If he doesn't win, he gets nothing. So that fee is generally a multiplier of the lodestar. So in that case I mentioned of the $300,000, a lodestar of two would be $600,000.
Got it.
So the judge is saying to the lawyer, look, you work for nothing, you won the case, and so out of the award, I'm going to give you not the $300,000 you would have worked for if you had a guaranteed payment at the end of your work. I'm going to give you $600,000.
Got it.
Twice what you would have what you would have been paid in the normal course, and that's the multiplier. Got it?
Got it. And just to level set this and sort of sear this in my brain and the brain of the audience, there is a commonly accepted, let's say, or a methodology that is used in trying to figure out how to pay lawyers. And then there's also a process that the court can take to put a multiplier on that based on the cases as they finish out. And so there's some sort of, go ahead.
The second part of what you said is right. The first part is up to the lawyer and the client. The lawyer says to the client, my rate is blah, $500 an hour, $300 an hour, $1,000 an hour. And however much work I do, that's how much I'm going to charge you. It's a little bit more complicated than that, because the lead lawyer will charge X dollars an hour. The second will charge, you know, X divided by, I don't know, 0.75, and then the clerks will charge, you know, a little bit less.
But regardless of the parties, there's a generally accepted process where people arrive to a number.
Yeah, and there's an accepted rate for, you know, top end, bottom end, middle end. I will tell you, and we'll come back to this, Delaware, because so many cases happen in Delaware, and because the law, you know, the pressure on the courts are so high, Delaware law charge rates are generally significantly higher than they are anywhere else in the country, except perhaps for New York City.
Got it.
But they're very high. I speak from experience.
Got it.
But anyway, okay. The lodestar is what the normal rate, you know, taking into account all of these things would be, and the multiplier is how many times the judge is prepared to ratchet it up because the guy worked on speculation, on spec. Makes sense?
It. Makes sense.
All Perfect. Right. So now what Grundfest has done is he's tested what the Delaware courts are awarding clients who win a case or awarding against the loser. And he's comparing that to the federal lodestar and multiplier. In other words, he's saying, okay, Delaware, let's just check that you're aligned with the federal cases that occur. And why would we do that? Because there's this rising concern about the Delaware awards to attorneys in these cases. And we're directly affected, Fazal, because, you know, the Delaware court found in favor of the attorneys, the case against Elon, and they found for hundreds of millions of dollars.
In fees. To the lawyers.
Yeah, to the lawyers. Now, the lawyers asked for $1.4 billion, but the Delaware court said, no, we're not going to give you quite as much. We'll only give you about $360 million. Well, that only turns out to be a heck of a lot of money, and it's out of our pockets, literally out of our pockets. Anyway, let's move on. And so what did Grundfest do? So actually this is wonderful. You know, we've talked about this Delaware chancellor making these florid statements in her judgment. But one of the things she said, I'm going to give you a multiple to the lodestar of 7x, which means what you would have charged if you had charged Mr. Tornetta, who owns 9 shares, you would have charged them X. I'm going to give you 7X, 7 times what you would have got. Now, how does that compare to the norm? And what is the norm? The federal cases. Why is the federal cases the norm? Because that's the highest court in the land, right?
And just to make sure I drive this point super hard, that 7X that the judge decided to give, that's on her own volition. That's her judgment.
Actually, they asked for a lot more. I think they asked for like double that, but she only gave, no, they asked for 4 times that. They asked for 20X, 28X.
Do we know if there's a process, like is there a book or a manual that the judge follows to try to come up with the multiplier, or is it just basically?
The point of what I'm trying to get to is to show you that there is a standard, there is a norm.
Yeah.
That norm is the federal cases, and that norm is what was in Delaware before these two activist judges arrived in Delaware. I'm going to talk about activist judges, of which this chancellor is one.
Got it.
But there are two activist judges that have turned Delaware law upside down. I mean, turned it upside down. So what I'm saying is that, and what Bill Gurley is saying, and actually what this academic is saying, is that Delaware has gone crazy, and this chancellor and the vice chancellor at Delaware are leading the charge. They've gone crazy.
Got it. And so, this is based on, again, on a report that came out about a month ago.
End of April. No, go back, please. Go back. Because I want to make a point here. She says, by the way, in what she says, in her judgment on the matter of the fees, she said, a multiple to Lodestar of 7x would not raise the federal eyebrow. And which means to say, you know, it's not unusual. It's not unusual. She said that while the multiple of 7 is at the high end, and, you know, that's like saying, you know, that, you know, it is such an exaggeration. It is such a sort of implausible remark that I can't even find anything reasonable in law for it. It's like she's turning the law upside down. She says, it's not too bad. And so it's not unusual that we are required. And the Delaware Supreme Court, in a finding about a similar type of judgment, said it's not so unusual that we're required to undo her consideration. And what this academic has done is he's found that it's not only unusual, it's extraordinarily unusual.
And so that's the quote from Grunfeld there at the bottom.
Yeah. He said, these are testable propositions. We estimate that the multipliers of 7 are approximately 0.023% of federal cases.
0.023%. Wow.
I mean, that's like, you know, that's like a tiny blip on the horizon. Yeah. It's like nothing. It doesn't happen in federal cases. It only happens in extreme federal cases where the judges find that it's such an extraordinary event, or that the lawyers are put in so much time, or whatever, you know, it's not even that the lawyers, it's just extreme.
Yeah.
And so he's done an analysis, an actual, you know, arithmetic analysis, and found this, and so that's what we're going to look at.
Got it.
I mean, here are some of the statements. He said federal multipliers of 7 are rare. The multipliers are generally, in the federal courses, the multipliers are about 1 to 2 range. In fact, counsel's in favor of presumptive ceiling of 4. In other words, the top level is 4 times the multiple of 4 on the Lodestar. And multiples of 4 are off the charts.
Got it.
It's like very rare.
So the norm is 1 to 2. That multiplier is 1 to 2. So like we talked about, the Lodestar method, the lawyer and their client come up with a rate, a number. And then typically the judge will award 1 to 2 times.
Yeah.
And then they could go up to as 4, but those are extremely rare. And those really get the numbers out of whack.
Yeah.
But the chancellor, Judge McCormick in this case, she nearly doubled the top level that's given.
Yeah.
She went to 7.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. I just want to make sure I drive that home.
She went to 7 and she had the gall to say this is not unusual.
Yeah, it's not unusual. We've seen this before. Got it. 0.023% of the time is not unusual. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So now let's move on. So Delaware multipliers, on the other hand, exceed federal multipliers by orders of magnitude. Not by 10 times, but multiple times, 10 times.
So Delaware-specific cases versus the federal, versus the totality of the United States.
Yes.
If you just analyze that versus everybody else in the country, those are orders of magnitude higher than the rest of the country.
And when we say an order of magnitude, we mean 10 times. 10x. So this is 2 or 3 times, 10 times.
Wow.
It's 20 or 30 times. Grok estimates, this is my research, that Delaware cases where Lodestar multiples exceed 10 occur over 100 times more frequently than in federal cases. Moreover, federal multipliers have remained constant over the years, while in Delaware they have been increasing rapidly in the last 2 decades. And there's a very important element about those last 2 decades. I want you to remember the last 2 decades, okay?
Got it.
So in federal, 2.3 cases out of 10,000 exceed 4. In Delaware, 236 cases out of 10,000.
Exceeds four.
The ratio, Delaware exceeds federal by 100 times.
Wow. So literally, and this is where, like, a person who might not be familiar with this, they look at the Delaware case and they say, okay, well, it only happens 2.36% of the time, yeah, where Delaware awards this gigantic pay to the lawyers.
Yeah.
But then if you look at the rest of the country, it's literally 100 times more, right?
And you know, those are federal cases, and federal cases typically, you know, arise to a much higher standard. They rise to, you know, they're generally considered, you know, much more grave. But here we have the state of Delaware acting as if they're the center of the earth, and they're acting, you know, on behalf of the complainant rather than on behalf of the defendant.
Got it. And so, and to drive that home, so the federal cases are against the United States of America, quote unquote.
That's right.
Delaware is against the state of Delaware.
Yeah, and right? generally states will really look to the federal record for their judicial behavior.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So
mind-blowing, but hard to believe numbers.
It's hard to believe. They really are hard to believe.
Yeah.
But I'm going to show you that the situation, and let's listen to Bill Gurley on the subject.
Yeah. All right. So here's Bill Gurley on his second clip.
So I would tell everyone to go read this, but if you're sitting on a board of a Delaware court and you're not aware that this is, and this is new, these are all cases between 2009 and 2024. If you're not aware that this is going on, that the rewards that are being paid out to lawyers, you know, for cases in Delaware are increasing at this level and are being paid out much more frequently at very high payouts, you need to be aware of this. To me, this is, you know, more damning than just the one Tesla thing. It says that Delaware was known as a place where you had, you know, we talked earlier about tariffs and chaos and calmness. Delaware was a place that was supposed to be business calm, where you didn't expect chaos, right? This shows that chaos is being built into the system, and it's a recent development.
And chaos in the form of obscene awards to lawyers.
Yeah.
Where the amount of payoff, and that's putting aside the merits of the case. We're putting aside the merits of the case. If it should have gone to court,
it shouldn't
have.
Well, I'm going to touch on the merits of the case because I'm going to show that the Delaware Chancery Court has become so activist that not only do they grant these awards to the quote-unquote victims, but they're inclined to take the side of the – this shows bias.
Got it.
So when you look at these awards, you can't just say, look, it's going to cost us more to defend a case in Delaware. What it's really telling us is that it's going to be a lot more difficult to defend a case, for a corporation to defend a case in Delaware, because the court leans.
Got it.
In a particular direction. This is evidence of bias. This, you know, and Bill doesn't raise that issue, and this paper definitely doesn't raise that issue. But I'm here to tell you, this is the trail of bias, and you don't have to be a lawyer. You just have to be an intelligent person to understand that when the judge leans in favor of a particular side consistently in terms of how they get paid, what does that indicate in the judge's mind?
Got it.
It indicates, you know, an empathy, a sympathy, a leaning towards that side.
Got it. So then for my uninformed brain, there's two different vectors. There's two different things happening. They are awarding ridiculous payouts, quote unquote, at 100x.
That's what the academic finds, and that's what Bill Gurley is stressing.
That's the data side. Yeah, but the second variable is also, but these are occurring and at a much higher propensity, and they're leaning to have these lawyers that represent clients against companies in Delaware. They are getting, this is sort of part of the video too, they are getting more favorable treatment in addition to getting higher payouts. So it's almost like an uncharitable way of let's say, describing this, is that the court is making the lawyers really rich for on purpose.
I'm afraid that's the innocent.
Allegedly, I don't want to go. I don't want to go to jail.
Allegedly, I could care less. I'm afraid it's an inescapable conclusion, and I'm going.
Will you bail me out, Larry, if I go to jail?
Probably not. Probably not. Thanks. Because I'm going to be sitting in the next cell.
All right, we'll call one of your friends to bail us both out.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Freedom of speech is, this is why freedom of speech is so important. All right, let's go.
This is an interesting slide. You see all these orange dots?
Do.
You see these orange dots? Can you see them?
Orange squares.
Orange squares.
Yes.
These are the multiples that are awarded in the state of Delaware. These are specific cases. The one at the highest level is Tornetta. That's the case against Tesla. That's the highest. That means that, you know, they were awarded, you know, the highest amount of dollars. The multiples is how far to the right, the x-axis. You see the little blue triangles?
Yep.
There are a couple of them. They're like a third of the, less than a third of the blue triangles than there are of the orange dots. Because these indicate the x-axis indicates the multiples. And you'll see that the orange dots, you know, the blue dots really come to an end somewhat before the 20 mark. And they really, most of them occur before the 10 mark. These are cases in the federal courts, and you must remember there are 10 times as many federal cases as there are Delaware cases. These are the total number of cases in the federal courts that have occurred where the multiples exceed seven. Seven or more, just a handful.
Okay.
But look at the orange dots, the orange squares.
And before we keep going here, Larry, let me just frame the chart here so like the audience is following along. So the x-axis, the horizontal axis, is the multiplier. So basically, when we talked about the 4x, the 7x, so you can see the line, the vertical line where the del is, that is where the 7x starts. And then as you go to the right, the multipliers get bigger. And then the y-axis, the vertical line, is how many dollars in millions are awarded to the lawyers based on that multiplier. And so if I use an example, the Dell 2-1, which is the one that's on the 7 multiplier line, this was a Delaware case. It's, for some reason, the mouse is not coming up on this end, but we'll highlight it on the video. Dell 2, which is the orange square towards the left on the line there, on the 7 line, that one was a Delaware case, which is why it's a square, orange square. It was a 6.76 multiplier, and they ended up awarding $267 million to the lawyers. And if you go all the way to the right, to the America's Mining one, all the way to the right, that's one that had a 66 times multiplier, again, in the state of Delaware, and it was an award of $304 million. Anyway, I just wanted to get that.
Why don't you just look at the one at the highest level, the biggest award ever, and that's Tornetta. That's the Tesla case. And it was awarded at, you know, $360-370 million. I forget how much. But if you take a line down from that to the multiplier, you'll see the multiplier is above 20.
25 times.
25 times. I mean, it's like unheard of. You know, there's only one case in history that's had a higher multiple than that. And that case, apparently, there was, you know, really bad things done and so on and so forth. I don't know enough about that case to comment on it because it's so extreme.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at this case and you consider how close a call it was, and you think about how many shares Mr. Tornetta owned.
Yep.
9 shares. And you think about this money coming right out of shareholders' pockets. You have to wonder about it all. You have to wonder about it all.
And again, and I want to drive home this point again with the Tornetta case with Tesla. The thing to really keep in mind here is that that same exact comp package that the lawyers went to court with saying that this is not right for the Tesla shareholders, it was re-voted on again in 2024 or 2024, and it passed with 70% plus approval. So yeah. A large majority of shareholders wanted this comp package, and then this lawyer and their client of 9 shares ended up winning that case, okay? And they got paid $345 million with a 25x multiplier, which a 25x multiplier implies some huge injustice was solved for. But it turns out that the same investors that theoretically, quote unquote, are impacted massively from this reapproved the comp package with a 70% approval.
That's right. Okay? And, you know, we weren't here to discuss the Tornetta case, but I also want to add another thing. No, what you said is absolutely correct because it points to how extreme the judgment was.
Yes.
But I will also add that the legislature of Delaware went to court, real hard work to pass a law to disable the court from ever making this kind of finding again. And despite that, the judge found a way, wow, you know, to re-award or not re-award or to neglect or to disregard,
bypass
the re-vote.
Crazy.
Whereas, you know, because she said for procedural reasons we don't look at the re-vote. Well, she could have for procedural reasons, for the same reason she had this extraordinary, you know, finding right outside of the norm, she could have had the same extraordinary finding to say, yeah.
That's a great point, eh? The 25X implies incredible, like just what an incredible thing. And then
justice.
And then so if the investors are still voting yes, so isn't that an incredible thing?
Yeah, and furthermore, the legislature, you know, they actually passed a law to say, no, this is a, you know, we will allow the board of directors some latitude in this. Anyway.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it is just extraordinary.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but anyway, let's move on.
Yeah. And just real quick, one last thing on this graph. So just to kind of understand why this graph is a big deal, the blue triangles are the federal ones. So you can kind of see the federal ones typically have much lower multiples. And for 7 multiple or more, there seem to be, like, let's say, about an equal number on this graph that's being displayed. But you can see that the federal ones, the multipliers tend to be a lot more reasonable, whereas there are these crazy outliers in Delaware that end up providing these giant multiples, like the America's Mining. It could be, you know, I'm not familiar with that case whatsoever, but maybe, you know, there was some great injustice.
There was really egregious stuff going on in there.
Okay.
But look, the triangles, there are only 4 or 5 triangles beyond 10. On 10 or above.
Yes.
There are 10 times as many cases in the federal. And so that 4 really is 0.4. And look how many of the orange beyond the 10. I mean, it's just incredible.
Like 12, 13. Yeah, pretty crazy. Okay, perfect.
Let's move on. So this is trying to show how in time things have changed.
Oh, man.
So the red or orange or whatever it is in the screen, it represents Delaware. The blue represents federal.
COVID made Delaware go crazy.
No, it wasn't COVID. You know what it was?
What was it?
It was the appointment of a guy by the name of Laster as vice chancellor, that is second in command, in 2009. And then it was the appointment of this chancellor in 2010 that really sent, you know, this thing soaring. So you'll see in 2009 we have the first advent of a greater than 10 multiplier.
And just to use that as an example, so if we look at the 2005 to 2009 range, so each bucket on the x-axis is a time range of about 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And then the dark blue and the light blue, the dark blue is any federal cases with 10 plus multipliers.
Correct.
Light blue is anything between 7 and 10. And then the same thing for the orange, for Delaware instead of federal. So the dark orange is anything 10 plus, and the light orange is anything between 7 and 10.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so Laster arrives in the court in 2009, and so we have our first massive verdict, our first massive multiplier in favor of the attorneys. And Laster is known as an activist, and so, you know, he's the first activist to arrive on the court. Now, you know, activist means something, and I'm not entirely sure what the definition of it is, but the definition generally means he's in favor of the people suing, and he wants to award them very large amounts of money because he believes in, you know, in, I don't know.
Corporate bad.
Yeah. I mean, that's about the size of what activist means, corporate bad. And so the court kind of takes off on this, and in 2010 to 2014, we see this massive expansion with Laster there, and it continues in 2015 to 2019, and then this woman arrives, and she's made the chancellor. And here's the thing about the chancellor. She gets to choose which cases which judges get. And so don't you know that she kind of concentrates the cases in the hands of Lassiter and herself? And so what happens in 2015 to 2020 to 2024, the awards jump. Now, you can't tell me that the guys were particularly bad in 2020 to 2024, or they were six times worse than they were in 2011 to 2019, or that they were 20 times worse than they were in 2014. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. So just to drive home that point, so if we just look at the previous 4 years, so if the one all the way to the right is 2020 to 2024, there were 13 cases that were awarded to the defendants that were 7 or more multiplier. There were 5 that were between 7 and 10, and 8 that were 10 or more. And the previous 4 years, 2015 to 2019, before McCormick was made chancellor, there were only 3, right? So there were 4 times, a sudden jump in the same 4 year period, 4 times significantly higher awards being given on those multipliers than the previous 4. And if you go back, 15 years, there were none in Delaware. And you can see the steady ramp up, right?
And the next slide, I actually point out when these people were appointed.
Perfect. Wow.
I don't know how else to put it, but this is absolute proof that McCormick and Laster have changed the law. And the thing about Delaware is that the law creates itself. It's not actually, there isn't anything on the books that says this is how the law works. The judges create the law. That's the way they do it in Delaware. And so the uncertainty, if this is going to get much, much higher, because now they've normalized it and they claim that they've normalized it according to federal principles, which is a lie. Because they claim that they've normalized it, now they can go you know, steadily up the chain. Who are they? They're lawyers. They're lawyers from the Delaware law, you know, community.
So they're redistributing money from corporations and their investors to lawyers.
To Delaware lawyers. Because you cannot conduct a case in Delaware without a Delaware lawyer.
That's fun.
Here's another fact. I had a case in Delaware. Well, at the outset, it was clear that we should conduct the case in Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
So my lawyer, my corporate lawyer here in North Carolina, said, "Oh yeah, we know several firms in Delaware. We'll get you a Delaware attorney." We went through three different. I've got a front doorbell.
No problem.
Nobody at the house. I'm going to have to go and get it. Hold on, okay. I'll do it anyway. Sorry.
It's all good. So we were talking about your case in Delaware. Yeah.
So there I was looking for a lawyer in Delaware, and my lawyer said, "Look, we know four firms who will not one would take the case." Now, wow. This is a case where I'm paying them to pursue a case because the case that I have is against a corporation registered in Delaware.
Okay.
So I went back, and sort of conferenced about it. And my lawyer said, "You know what? I think we may be able to find a way to actually conduct this case in North Carolina," which is how it went forward. We found, we had reason to base the case out of North Carolina because for whatever reason. So it was with such a sense of relief because when I learned in my research what the Delaware rates were, I was astounded.
Mm.
They were literally three times the rate of North Carolina.
Wow. Wow.
So you're not doing yourself any favor.
What year was this, Larry? Sorry, what year was this?
This was last year, 2024.
Wow.
You're not doing yourself any favor basing your company in Delaware. Because even if you're not subject to some litigation by some group of, unhappy shareholders, rephrase that, by a lawyer who sees an opportunity to build a group of unhappy shareholders.
Mm.
If you just have an ordinary court case about some matter, some dispute between yourself and another company, and you have to hire a Delaware law firm, it's going to be incredibly expensive.
Yeah. Wow.
And here's the thing. Crazy. You probably have your local lawyer, like I have my North Carolina lawyer, and he would be instructing the Delaware lawyer. Can you imagine? You've got the North Forex. Carolina law firm to pay, and you've got the Delaware law firm.
That's wild.
Anyway, but if you look at the slide, it must be absolutely clear to you that if you position yourself in Delaware, as so many startup ventures have, 90% of startup ventures over the past, decade have based their operations in Delaware. They've done themselves a terrible disservice.
Yeah. And this is why states like Texas and states like Nevada, potentially Arizona, like these are sort of like the states that are stand to win quite big, because now there appears to be a movement away from Delaware towards these much more, let's say, reasonable states to do business in.
Yeah. And, there's another wrinkle. And I'm not a lawyer and I'm not an expert on this particular wrinkle, but here.
Although we should have been in Delaware because we got paid a lot more money.
yes. Here's the wrinkle. Delaware is kind of like British law. It's based upon, precedent, legal precedent, and it builds on legal cases. And so the lawyers kind of make up the law in a way. The judges make up the law, but they're, driven by law, by theories created by lawyers. That is not so in these other states. these other states, the law is based upon what is written. So you don't have this very comprehensive statute in Delaware on every one of these matters. You have all this precedent to base it on, and that's how the judges work.
Very interesting.
So judges that are activists can make their own laws and do make their own laws, as we've seen. And that's why the state of Delaware slapped down the judges by creating, these laws to kind of counter this development. And you know what? The state of Delaware is going to really pass judgment on these laws. Why? Because the state of Delaware, the judges in Delaware believe they are higher than, in terms of lawmaking, they are, they can take precedent over the legislature.
Can I drive home that point real quick, to make sure I fully understand? So in Delaware, there is a propensity to try to use previous rulings in that state to make rulings, right, for that specific case. So like, let's say you are in court for something that has happened in the past where it was tried, and the judges came with a decision on that may be close to the books, but kind of they take an interpretation and they say this is the judgment, so this is the judgment. A future judge can use that thing.
Must use it
to make a judgment. So then these things can basically morph over time based on the rulings, whereas in a state like, let's say, Texas, it's not really dependent on how the judge rules.
It has to follow the law. The law is very prescriptive, and they've been very cautious about making it very prescriptive.
Got it.
So they define what percentage of the votes the company must have in order to reach this, and they prescribe what books and records a lawyer can call for in terms of investigating the case. So in the case of Delaware, they can call for all records and books going back to the year dot if necessary.
Got it.
And the books and records don't have to be anything about the case. It's up to them to decide, you can have all these books and records. You can have the company's pay. You can have the company's secret formulas. You can have all of this stuff. They can make that ruling. In Texas, for example, they've been very careful to prescribe that only the records and books pertinent, I don't know the legal terms and so on, but my understanding of the law is that only the records and books pertinent to this narrow thing can you call for in this narrow case, in this particular case, in a particular case. All of the stuff, and look, we're seeing precedent setting right here. We're seeing it in action here. Over time, the court has been able to, ratchet up the awards and the number of awards and the rate at which the multiplier is. And they've ratcheted it up, and there's nothing to prescribe them to say, hey, you can't do this kind of thing.
Wow. So what we're basically getting at here is like, don't go to Delaware.
I mean, don't go to Delaware. I mean, Bill,
man,
being a lot. Yeah. Let's hear what Bill has to say on the subject.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and pull this up. Here's Bill. On his third clip.
It turns out that in the 20 cases where you have this super high multiplier, 55% of the cases are just two of the judges. And there's something else that I learned in reading this, which I didn't know. But the chancellor, who is one of the two, gets to pick who the cases are assigned to. And so the chancellor's creating these super high multiples, and then the chancellor's in charge of handing cases, and she could hand them to herself or to this other judge who's also doing the same thing. And so I think eyes wide open. I mean, I read this, and I think, any company that I'm involved with, I'm going to encourage to leave, because this is radically different than why I was told we were supposed to go to Delaware.
Wow.
I mean, what he's saying, in simple, clear, non-legal, non-technical terms, is get the hell out of Delaware and don't go near it.
Man, it's such an eye open. Okay, This is one of those, I don't know how often you run into this, Larry, but I feel like, I don't know if this is my inexperience or like I'm just naive, or the more I am surprised by, okay, let me rephrase that. I'm constantly shocked at how unbelievably broken some very fundamental things are. Yeah. Is that new? Like, what is that?
It's not, I mean, you know, it's always been with us, the complexity of life and the layers of bureaucracy have always been with us. But those layers have become incredibly dense and incredibly, you know, deep and incredibly complex. And, you know, you go back to, you know, when I was a youngster, when I was like in my early 30s and, you know, in business here in the United States, things were just so much easier, just so much easier. And now we've ratcheted up this level of complexity and this level of bureaucracy and this level of legality to degrees that make it difficult. And it's one of the things that are impeding progress in terms of U.S., you know, competitiveness.
Yeah. My theory around that is that the United States has been on such a huge prosperity kick for 100 years that at some point there was too much to go around. Or not too much to go around. It was so easy for the money to go around that there were just layers built in the middle to siphon off the money. And now we're left with the remnants of that system accruing around that behemoth. And now that we're trying to recompete again in the world stage because you have up-and-comers like China like fighting for the top spot, we're stuck with this giant mess in the middle that we have to undo to keep going forward. That's my sense.
Yeah, my sense is a little different. I mean, I come from it from, you know, I think that it has a lot to do with progressive politics. I think it has to do with this idea that government can fix all. Look, you know, you're a little bit too young, but I lived through the whole world of, you know, communism and, you know, mm-hmm. the move to communism. And, you know, the youth of my day, I mean, everybody was a communist, and that was Karl Marx, you know, led progressive thought. Well, Marx is no longer around, but progressive thought has morphed into a very popular sort of mindset in academic world, and it's leached into all of government, and it's leached into law. And so what we have is we have this notion that, you know, government can fix all, and government needs to be, you know, making sure that everybody is quote unquote safe, everybody is quote unquote equal, everybody is quote, and so it goes. And so, you know, I sound like a, you know, somebody from the dark ages, but, and, you know, I was progressive when I was young. I was very progressive. I tell everybody who is prepared to listen, I came to this country because of John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
And John F. Kennedy was a leading, you know, liberal in his time. But John F. Kennedy would not be a member of the Democratic Party today. He would be aghast at what's happening in the Democratic Party today. So let's get off party politics and just say that we have a point, we have an option in this country. We have such a great option. We can choose our state in which to incorporate. And I just beg and plead everybody, if you're starting a business today, or if you're running a business today, do not incorporate in Delaware. And if you're incorporated in Delaware, Dexit. Just
Dexit.
Get the hell out of there.
Yeah. I really appreciate you taking the time to put this together, Larry, because, you know, I think from my side, again, I don't have nearly the experience that you do, even though you're only a couple years older than I am, which is pretty impressive. but the Tesla case, the Tornetta case, was very eye-opening because I just could not understand how a ruling could happen. Like, I just, when, you know, I try to think, you know, I like to think I'm a logical person. And when I'm just thinking through that case, It did not make any sense to me how something like this could happen. And as the onion gets peeled, and as we get information like you've put together, and we really look at the holistic nature of like the underlying thing that created that decision, yeah. I feel like it's very difficult to say that this is anything but what you've presented, in my opinion. So I really want to thank you for taking the time to put that together. And I think people that watch this video, I think are going to be surprised and shocked by how unreal this sounds, which kind of really makes the reality more damning than I think most people realize. It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. You know, and I'm all for protecting the consumer. I'm all for protecting. Like I would love nothing more than that. But that's not that. If we were really protected, those lawyers with the Tornetta case would not be getting paid $345 million. Because who's paying for that? Investors.
They're getting paid 20 plus times Lodestar. 20 Crazy. Times. I mean, you know, if we consider that she's being fair in her judgment, then that 20 times, 20 plus Lodestar indicates to us where her mind is.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think about the revote, the vote that was held, where 70% of shareholders, after all the airing of all her court, of all her findings, the airing of all the, you know, special committee's findings, despite all of that, she just poo-pooed them, laughed them aside, and then granted a 20-plus Lodestar. It's just shattering to anybody who believes in the rule of law.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Thank you, Larry. Thank you for your time, and thank you for putting this so succinctly and easy to follow. I think, like in my head now, I'm like, okay, what's the best title for this video? Why Delaware is Corrupt. I mean, I don't know. We'll think about that later. Anyway, thank you, Larry. Really appreciate your time.